listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skull in a pool of cerebrospinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. You say placebo, and I say nocebo. How effective is the placebo effect? Most of us have heard of the placebo effect, but most of us also have a very poor understanding of what it is and what it is not. A placebo can be defined as a treatment or substance that has no actual medical efficacy, but is intended to deceive a patient into believing that it does. The placebo effect is a phenomenon that happens when a person perceives an improvement in their condition that is caused by their expectations rather than by the substance itself. How is it possible for a person to feel better when no effective treatment was administered? People on the opposite side of the spectrum from scientific skeptics like me, especially those with an anti-science and anti-scientific medicine bias, might assert that the body has amazing powers of self-healing, or that the mind can achieve anything if you just believe that it can, or that if you learn to manipulate your chi, you can use it to heal yourself. While I concede that the body does have an impressive array of systems for dealing with injury and illness, I'm not sure that the placebo effect constitutes a form of healing. So far as I know, there has never been a case of the mind, or for that matter, an unproven magical energy like chi, being able to, for example, regrow an amputated limb, or to allow a quadriplegic to walk again, or to reverse the progress of ALS. Clearly, there are limits to the mind and body's ability to heal. What we do know is that your brain holds the keys to what amounts to a medicine cabinet inside your body that is stocked with painkillers, mood-altering chemicals, and hormones that can help mitigate a number of conditions, or can also work in the other direction and cause negative effects. Whether mitigation constitutes healing is a different question. As Mr. Spock once said, pain is a thing of the mind. Treating it is a good thing, but doesn't necessarily address the underlying cause. This has a direct connection to martial arts training. I can't tell you how many times a brand new student has told me at the end of their very first martial arts lesson that they feel great. Of course, I enjoy hearing that, but sometimes the student is laboring under the misconception that the reason he feels so good is that the exercise from one session has already wrought significant physiological improvements in his muscles and metabolism. Please don't misunderstand me. I am not discounting the importance of exercise for good health. I'm an enthusiastic supporter of the value of exercise. But the reality is that after a single lesson, there hasn't yet been enough time for truly significant physiological improvement, although it's important to point out that you'll never make it to significant improvement without doing the first workout. What is true is that exercise tends to induce the brain to release painkillers called beta endorphins. The new student is sometimes disappointed when they find out that what they were experiencing was a natural high, and that martial arts training has no specific magic power to heal that a brisk game of basketball doesn't also have. As I have said in earlier episodes, many people associate the martial arts with ancient Asian wisdom. As a result, many of them operate under the mistaken idea that the martial arts constitute a form of magic, or that they have quasi-magical properties. The primary purpose of the Martial Brain podcast series is to dispel such notions. Getting back to the placebo effect, its history goes way back. Even ancient doctors, such as they were, learned that some patients seemed to feel better simply because the doctor paid attention to them, and thus learned not to waste rare and expensive preparations on those patients. Simple weak teas or inert substances like pellets of beeswax would send such patients away happy. The knowledge of the existence of such patients and how to deal with them was passed down through the years. One of my favorite stories of early knowledge relating to the placebo effect is that the Catholic Church in the 1500s became concerned that some people who claimed to be experiencing demonic possession might only be imagining it. If true, this was wasting the valuable time of the church's staff of exorcists. Wanting to distinguish these cases from those of authentic demonic possession, the church made use of false holy objects. A church official would give such a sham object to the person claiming demonic possession in order to gull them into believing the object might cause the demon to react to its holy presence. If the person had a reaction, like violent paroxysms or contortions, the church officials then knew that there was no real demon here, just a fallible human brain deceiving itself. You probably have a life history of the placebo effect yourself, from your mother kissing it to make it better, if from nothing else. The biggest problem with the placebo effect as useful therapy is that it's terribly inconsistent. It only works in at best around a third of patients. Why would that be? Remember that the placebo effect is defined as the improvement that is caused by the expectations of a patient. That means that the sugar pill, or whatever other sham treatment the doctor administers, does not magically unlock your brain's medicine cabinet. It is your own expectation that does that. As regular listeners to this podcast know, I frequently refer to situations where each person lies at one point or another on a spectrum. In this case, the spectrum is the one of expectations. When a doctor or therapist treats a patient, that patient may be expecting a good result. This patient is probably more likely to experience the placebo effect. There are also contrarian people on the other end of the spectrum who think the treatment will make them worse. This expectation can unleash the negative effects from the brain's medicine cabinet to which I earlier referred, and result in what is called the nocebo effect. That's right, there really is such a thing and such a word. I'm not making that up. A big source of material for this podcast is the human brain's many quirky ways of hindering our ability to think and act rationally, causing no end of harm in the process. But the nocebo effect means that your brain can cause you physical harm directly. Whether it causes you pain, affects your mood, or lowers your body's defenses against infection, the brain's ability to do harm seems to match its ability to mitigate pain or depression. Getting back to our spectrum of expectations, there are also those in the middle who give no thought at all to the matter one way or the other, and thus have no expectations. These people are less likely to experience either the placebo or nocebo effect. So whether you are credulous enough to experience the placebo effect, cantankerous enough to suffer the nocebo effect, or are one of those people in between who just isn't even paying attention, it should be clear that with this wide variety of people, the placebo effect is inconsistent and unreliable. Another problem is the ethics of a doctor essentially lying to a patient by administering a placebo to them. Modern medicine, at least officially, frowns on deceiving adult patients with placebos. They are used far less today than they were in the past. A different use for placebos has arisen in the age of modern medical research. You see, scientists have long known that the placebo effect can corrupt the results of a research study involving proposed or existing drugs or medical treatments. If a drug shows positive results in treating symptoms that have a subjective nature, like pain or depression, how do you know whether the result is due to a real therapeutic effect from the drug or treatment being tested, or due to the placebo effect, or even a combination of them both? The answer is double-blind, placebo-controlled studies. In such a study, the subjects are divided into groups. Group A, for example, would be dosed with the real drug, and group B would be given a placebo. Neither group knows which of the two possible substances they are receiving. Placebo-controlled studies are the reason that when you hear that a study had a negative result, you don't hear the simple statement that the drug or treatment doesn't work. Instead, you hear the statement that it, quote, works no better than a placebo, unquote. This is research speak, meaning that the drug had no effect strong enough to pick it out from the noise in the data caused by the placebo effect. Perversely, many advocates for alternative medicine hang their hats on such pronouncements as if they are somehow positive. When a study shows that homeopathy, aromatherapy, acupuncture, Reiki, or whatever other flavor of unproven pseudoscience-based treatment works no better than a placebo, some of its proponents rephrase this to say that it works at least as well as a placebo, as if that means something positive. "You see, homeopathy works as a placebo," they might say. Well, first of all, as I've already stated, no placebo works based on its own properties. It is the expectations of the patient that make it work, when it does work. So if homeopathy, for example, works as a placebo, then the ignorance of the patient allowed the expectation that it would work. Now, if you want to stake the reputation of your alternative medicine on the ignorance of your patients, then... oh, wait. You already do that anyway. Never mind. Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think, or check out old episodes of the Martial Brain podcast at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for the Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Martial Brain or the Rising Phoenix Academy at our website, rpmartialarts.com.